Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Fan of History. I'm the Fan of History, and with me is another Fan of History, Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Dan. We're here doing a podcast on the 970s BC. We're still deep in the Dark Ages.
Yeah, we are, for sure. This is... the sources are few and weak and vague, and it's... But we know a little bit. Check out our YouTube channel, too. We'll put a link in the show notes, or you can just search YouTube for Fan of History. We are doing something different here on the podcast. We are two people instead of one. But the YouTube show is a bit ahead. So if you want to know what happens afterwards, check it out.
Mm-hmm. And last time on Fan of History in the 980s BC, we talked about Babylon. They went through three kings very quickly. One ruled for 3 years, one for 3 months. The seventh dynasty of Babylon began. Not a lot's going on in Europe. And Assyria has... built the most powerful army in the world, and the beginning of Hinduism starts to happen in India, and King Zhao of China decides to try and conquer the south. Yeah. So what happens next, Dan?
Well, I have some sad, very old news, because in 979 BC, Marbiti Apla Usur, the king of Babylon and the only king of the 7th dynasty, he dies. And he was the guy who was from Elam. So Elam rule of Babylon ends. We don't even know if he ruled Elam at the same time. And Elam disappears from the record for over 100 years after this. So Elam is always around, always unknown, in southern Iran. They bury this guy as a legitimate king with full honors. And is succeeded by Nabu Mukin Apli, who seems to be a Babylonian, or Kassite rather, which are fairly integrated into Babylonia.
Okay. And I just want to add one other thing, is that all of our history that we're going to talk about here on the show is from actual historical records kept by these people. So it's not archaeological information. It's just information. It's a minimal amount of archaeological information. And the majority of it is history that was recorded by these people.
Yes. Oh, at some point... Sometimes it's recorded by ancient historians that are much later, but we'll mention that when it happens. Okay. Nabu Mukin Apli. Babylonian king's names always begins with a god, so he likes Nabu, the scribe of the gods. He starts the 8th dynasty of Babylon this same year then, and he will rule Babylon for 34 years. We do have some minimal records. The Babylonians are always these very thorough record keepers, but not in this dark age. So a couple of hundred years earlier, we have a lot of Babylonian records, but now we don't have a lot. But we have some from Nabu Mukin Apli. And his country is invaded by Arameans. It has been invaded by Arameans for 200 years. but the Arameans are squatting in the countryside and sort of causing chaos, but they're not taking cities, they're not building cities, they're just there, destroying the farms. And one inscription says that the Arameans, or the Sutians, as the Babylonians call them, were belligerent. And there was a very important festival, I think it is the New Year's festival, and they had to bring god statues between cities in Babylon, in Babylonia, and they couldn't do it because there were belligerent Arameans running around in the countryside. So this king writes a very angry inscription saying that, no, I missed the New Year's festival. The gods hate me now.
Okay. Hey, I have a question about the New Year's festival. What kind of calendar did they have? Did they have the, you know, what we use now is the standard 365-day-a-year calendar? Or did they go off of like an older calendar that we don't use anymore?
They definitely don't have our calendar, but the Babylonians are the inventors of a lot of things we use today, like the 60-second, 60-minute system. They are obsessed with the number 60. But I have to look into that to answer it, actually. So I'm not quite sure.
Okay. So they were just... We don't know why they were into the number 60. It was just seemed
I think
like...
it was their base for... like our base is 10, their base is 60. So they count using 60.
Okay.
So that's actually why there's 60 minutes to an hour, which makes no sense today.
Huh. Well, that's really interesting.
But it's their fault. Over to China. In 977 BC, King Shao, he remember him? He loved rare animals and zoos and beautiful things and not war. But now he has to go to war. And there are a lot of versions about this story. I did one on YouTube, but then I heard several others. But he's going to the Chu province, which is to the south. And he's bringing 6 heavenly armies. That sounds like a lot of people. So it seems like he's... the message he has received from the Chu province is that we have discovered a new rare bird. But if you're going to look for a rare bird, why do you bring 6 heavenly armies? So possibly he was going to attack the lands to the south of the Chu province together with the Chu people. But the thing that happens is that the Xiong'ai, who is a person, the leader of Chu, he ambushes the king and the heavenly armies then. And the whole thing is a trap. So King Shao tries to retreat and ravage the countryside while he's doing so, because he's so angry. And he tries to cross the Han River. And while doing so, he drowns. So the King Shao, the third king of the Su dynasty, the fourth king of the Su dynasty, sorry, dies in this civil war. And he's succeeded by his son, King Mu. And this guy, King Mu, is the greatest king of the entire Su dynasty. And the Su dynasty lasts for 800 years. And this is its peak, and it's pretty early. It's only been going on for 70 years, about. And King Mu will rule Su China for 54 years. And he's apparently 51 years old when he becomes the king. So he's supposed to become 105 years old, and we'll talk a lot about King Mu.
Okay, is that 105 year old age? Is that do you think that's like a exaggeration, or do you think that's okay?
Yeah, ancient kings have often exaggerated reigns and lifespans. So you'll find King Pepi II of Egypt is the longest ruler in history. He ruled for 96 years. And that is probably exaggerated too. We don't know what happens to Xiong'ai of Chu, the guy who ambushed the last king. But King Mu is a very different king than his father, because he is more ambitious than wise. And he will try to do great things. And most of the time he will succeed in doing so. But he will also become... So the Su dynasty will... spend a long, long time being weak. And they will remember the days of King Mu, and they will build legends about this guy. So he will become like a Chinese superhero later.
Okay.
Let's move to India.
Okay.
We don't have any dated events from India, and the problem is the same as always. They don't have written records, so it all comes down to from oral traditions and archaeology. Because this is the painted greyware period of Indian archaeology, and it lasts from 1200 to 900 BC. We know that there is a kingdom, Kuru. It's the central tribe of the Mahabharata times, and it's a city-state and a considerable political power, and it rises to power either in this decade or in about 100 years earlier, so we don't really know exactly. There's also a kingdom called Panchala. These are both Aryan kingdoms, Indo-European kingdoms in the north of India. And there are some sacred Vedic texts being written in this period, like the Brahmanas and the Sulba Sutras. Please excuse me, all Indian people, for butchering your beautiful language. I want to thank Ajata Shatru from the Historum forums, because he has been helping me with some of this information. It's very hard to find information about India, but I've said that before.
All right, well, so you've talked about a lot of the Asia, and mostly Asia, because it seems like at this point in the world, this is where the majority of civilization is. What's going on in the rest of the world, like Europe and...
Europe is still deep, deep, deep in the Dark Age. But we do have the Villanovans hanging around in northern Italy. These are the ancestors of the Etruscans. And they are in a very early stage. They are egalitarian. They have no noblemen, no ruling class. And... they're really no different than any other European culture at this point. There are Latins living on the Palatine Hill, but it's a small village in what will become Rome. So obviously the story of Romulus and Remus is not true, because this is over 200 years before the founding of Rome, but something is already there. And we're gonna try to avoid Rome, because there are so much legends and obviously untrue stuff, until 616 BC. There are also the Greeks, but we don't really know anything about Greece in this decade. And Greece is a very, very dark place at this time, with no real cities or towns.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that in the, I believe it was in the last episode, where we talked about how Greece, they don't have any writing, and they're really in the Dark Ages still.
Yeah, they've lost their writing, they've lost their towns, they've lost their trading networks. There is some Achaeans still hanging on to Athens, but Athens is could possibly have 1,000 inhabitants, something like that. So it's pretty much a village at this time.
Okay.
But if in the Levant something happens in 977 BC... and it's the pharaoh Siamun. He attacks the Philistine city of Gezer, and it's in the Gaza Strip today. So people are making war in the Levant all throughout history. It's the most contested area in the world. Gezer is a Canaanite city-state belonging to the Philistines in the foothills of the Judean mountains. And this attack is covered in the Bible, but the pharaoh is not named. So, and this town of Gezer did owe loyalty to the pharaohs during the New Kingdom before the Bronze Age collapse. So 300 years before this, it used to belong to Egypt. And for some reason, Pharaoh Siamun takes an army outside of Egypt and attacks and razes this city to the ground. We are not sure why. The Bible has a theory about why, but it's not a very reliable one.
Okay, what's that theory?
The theory is based on the fact that Solomon rules in Israel, And archaeology does not support Solomon's Golden Kingdom in Israel at this time. And he's allied with Siamun. And he brings in Siamun to crush Gezer because Gezer has been rude to him. But we have this unreliable source in the Bible, and we do have an unreliable inscription about this attack. But we have two different unreliable sources saying the same thing. And we also found, oh, I didn't, but somebody did, found an archaeological destruction layer in Gezer from this time. So for some reason, the Pharaoh takes an army outside Egypt, and this has not happened since the New Kingdom, because Egyptian soldiers don't want to go outside of Egypt. Because if you die outside of Egypt, you do not get to resurrect. And they're all about resurrection. Next year, in 976 BC, a guy called Susenes III becomes the high priest of Amun at Thebes. And this is the most important priesthood in Egypt. And Thebes is to the south, pretty far from where the pharaoh rules from, because he rules from Tanis in the delta to the north. And remember this guy, because we'll talk about him next time, Susenes III, the high priest of Amun at Thebes. Our last dated event from this decade is from 972 BC, when the king of Assyria, Ashur-Rabi II, dies. And he's succeeded by Assur-resi-isi II. And this new king seems to be quite old at the time of succession. We don't really know the ages of Assyrian kings, but there are signs that he's very, very old when he assumes the throne. And the Assyrians are pretty much still fending their home territory from Arameans and other loose peoples nearby that are encroaching on their territory.
Okay. And okay, so now that we've covered Europe and Asia, what's going on in the Americas right now? I remember last time we talked about how the Olmecs had the most, in modern day Mexico, had the most advanced art in the world of the time, arguably the best art in the world at the time. What's going on now?
We don't really know anything that happened to the Olmecs in this decade, as we can't read their writing, but they are still around. They are doing quite well. Their cultural center is San Lorenzo. But there are signs that stuff is not entirely good in San Lorenzo. And it seems that a lot of things are going wrong in San Lorenzo, actually. We'll talk more about that in the 950s episode.
On the next episode of the Fan of History podcast, the 960s BC, Simeon will break tradition, Assyria will get a new king, and the mystery of Susenes III, we'll talk about that, and King Mu will fight the dog people.
The dog people. Yes, please go to YouTube, subscribe, like and share, give us reviews on iTunes, and that'll help us keep going. And thanks for listening to the Fan of History.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.